Welcome everybody to Something Genuine. So I'm glad we're all on the same wacky page today. Mine's been really, really wacky. I was going to apologize to the Mighty Companions for having missed their program, but it looks like it was a recording anyhow. So okay. But we are here for Something Genuine, where we listen to and discuss selected TED Talks. Shauna just sent me a whole batch that she watched. I haven't had an opportunity to watch them yet, but I will. I love TED Talks. In fact, yesterday I was painting the trim on the ladies' dorm and listened to TED Talks all day long. So that was fun. And and every now and then I got to go over with my painty finger, with my, you know, paint all over my finger and poke the screen so I can save the TED Talk, you know. It's very entertaining. But I do want to say a couple things, and I may say this for the next few programs. I want to talk a little bit about why we're watching TED Talks. Being a crazy day, I didn't get a chance to look it up again, what TED means. Maybe some of you know. It's technology, education, and development, I think. Is it development? Don seems to know. We'll see.
It's entertainment for the E.
Is it? Mm-hmm. Okay. Very good. But the reason that we're watching these talks, again, is because at least the talks that I have been suggesting to you are they're research based, they're science based, or they're experience based talks that all point to the same truths that we're learning right here in Awakening Together. They're not dogma based. They're not, you know, of course, miracles based or NTI or, you know, generally not any of those other spiritual texts that we're used to reading. Again, they're based on research, science, experience, and point to these same truths. So it's important to look for where these talks teach the same thing or talk about the same thing that we're learning here in Awakening Together. So it's important to make those connections. You will, given the source of the talks, you will hear people say some things that might not be consistent with what you're learning here at Awakening Together, or what you believe that we teach here at Awakening Together. And I think what I want to say is it's more important, I think, to look for the consistency than where they're inconsistency, where they're inconsistent. although it may be important to point out those places where the talks are inconsistent. But by and large, I think we are looking for, yes, technology, entertainment, and design. By and large, I think we're looking to see where people's experience, where research, where science supports what we're learning here. So that's what I would ask you to look for. In addition, I want to make a point about, you know, I said yesterday I listened to talks all day long while I was painting, to TED Talks all day long while I was painting. But I can't really, you know, a phrase or two maybe I can remember, but I can't really pull out what was said. And there were so many things said, it was like, oh, yes, exactly. You know, you'd hear somebody say something and go, yes, that's exactly what we're learning. But I can't tell you today what those things were. In fact, I don't think I can tell you at the end of a talk, of any particular talk, what it was where you go, oh, yeah, they really got it. You know, where those consistencies come in. For that reason, I want to encourage you guys to take notes during the talk. That may sound like work, but I promise you, you'll be happy when it comes time for the discussion. You know, just jot down a line or two, right? Yeah, Shauna, you always take notes. Shauna's well prepared. If you'll grab a pen and a piece of paper and just jot down a note or two, something that you want to remember to talk about when we discuss that, I think that we'll find that our discussions are more substantive in that way. So, Okay. Anywho, having said all that, let me once again, I should take notes on this, the procedure to get me shut down and the talk going. But we're playing this week a talk that some of you have probably heard before. It's Brené Brown on vulnerability. So let me get it going here.
So I'll start with this. A couple of years ago, an event planner called me because I was going to do a speaking event, and she called and she said, I'm really struggling with how to write about you on the little flyer. And I thought, well, what's the struggle? And she said, well, I saw you speak, and I'm going to call you a researcher, I think, but I'm afraid if I call you a researcher, no one will come because they'll think you're boring and irrelevant. And I was like, okay. And she said, but the thing I liked about your talk is, you know, you're a storyteller, so I think what I'll do is just call you a storyteller. And of course, the academic, insecure part of me was like, you're going to call me a what? And she said, I'm going to call you a storyteller. And I was like, oh, why not Magic Pixie? I was like, let me think about this for a second. And so I tried to call deep on my courage. And I thought, you know, I am a storyteller. I'm a qualitative researcher. I collect stories. That's what I do. And maybe stories are just data with a soul, you know, and maybe I'm just a storyteller. So I said, you know what, why don't you just say I'm a researcher storyteller? And she went, there's no such thing. So I'm a researcher storyteller. And I'm going to talk to you today. We're talking about expanding perception. And so I want to talk to you and tell some stories about a piece of my research that fundamentally expanded my perception and really actually changed the way that I live and love and work and parent. And this is where my story starts. When I was a young researcher, doctoral student, my first year I had a research professor who said to us, here's the thing, if you cannot measure it, it does not exist. And I thought he was just sweet talking me. I was like, really? And he's like, absolutely. So you have to understand that I have a bachelor's in social work, a master's in social work, and I was getting my PhD in social work. So my entire academic career was surrounded by people who kind of believed in the life's messy, love it, you know, and I'm more the life's messy, clean it up, organize it, and put it into a bento box. And so to think that I had found my way, to found a career that takes me, you know, really one of the big sayings in social work is lean into the discomfort of the work. And I'm like, you know, knock discomfort upside the head and move it over and get all A's. That was my mantra. So I was very excited about this. And so I thought, you know what, this is the career for me because I am interested in some messy topics, but I want to be able to make them not messy. I want to understand them. I want to hack into these things that I know are important and lay the code out for everyone to see. So where I started was with connection, because by the time you're a social worker for 10 years, what you realize is that connection is why we're here. It's what gives purpose and meaning to our lives. This is what it's all about. It doesn't matter whether you talk to people who work in social justice and mental health and abuse and neglect. What we know is that connection, the ability to feel connected, is neurobiologically, that's how we're wired. It's why we're here. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to start with connection. Well, you know that situation where you get an evaluation from your boss and she tells you 37 things that you do really awesome and one thing that you can't, you know, an opportunity for growth. And all you can think about is that opportunity for growth, right? Well, apparently this is the way my work went as well, because when you ask people about love, they tell you about heartbreak. When you ask people about belonging, they'll tell you their most excruciating experiences of being excluded. And when you ask people about connection, the stories they told me were about disconnection. So very quickly, really about 6 weeks into this research, I ran into this unnamed thing that absolutely unraveled connection in a way that I didn't understand or had never seen. And so I pulled back out of the research and thought, I need to figure out what this is. And it turned out to be shame. And shame is really easily understood as the fear of disconnection. Is there something about me that if other people know it or see it, that I won't be worthy of connection? The things I can tell you about it, it's universal. We all have it. The only people who don't experience shame have no capacity for human empathy or connection. No one wants to talk about it, and the less you talk about it, the more you have it. What underpinned this shame, this I'm not good enough, which we all know that feeling, I'm not blank enough, I'm not thin enough, rich enough, beautiful enough, smart enough, promoted enough. The thing that underpinned this was excruciating vulnerability. This idea of, in order for connection to happen, we have to allow ourselves to be seen, really seen. And you know how I feel about vulnerability. I hate vulnerability. And so I thought, this is my chance to beat it back with my measuring stick. I'm going in. I'm going to figure this stuff out. I'm going to spend a year. I'm going to totally deconstruct shame. I'm going to understand how vulnerability works. And I'm going to outsmart it. So I was ready. And I was really excited. As you know, it's not going to turn out well. You know this. So I could tell you a lot about shame, but I'd have to borrow everyone else's time. But here's what I can tell you that it boils down to. And this may be one of the most important things that I've ever learned in the decade of doing this research. My 1 year has turned into 6 years, thousands of stories, hundreds of long interviews, focus groups. At one point, people were sending me journal pages and sending me their stories, thousands of pieces of data. And 6 years, and I kind of got a handle on it. I kind of understood this is what shame is, this is how it works. I wrote a book, I published a theory, but something was not okay. And what it was is that if I roughly took the people I interviewed and divided them into people who really have a sense of worthiness, that's what this comes down to, a sense of worthiness. They have a strong sense of love and belonging. And folks who struggle for it, and folks who are always wondering if they're good enough. There was only one variable that separated the people who have a strong sense of love and belonging and the people who really struggle for it, and that was the people who have a strong sense of love and belonging believe they're worthy of love and belonging. That's it. They believe they're worthy. And to me, the hard part of the one thing that keeps us out of connection is our fear that we're not worthy of connection was something that personally and professionally I felt like I needed to understand better. So what I did is I took all of the interviews where I saw worthiness, where I saw people living that way, and just looked at those. What do these people have in common? And I have a slight office supply addiction, but that's another talk. So I had a manila notebook, a manila folder, and I had a Sharpie, and I was like, what am I going to call this research? And the first words that came to my mind were wholehearted. These are kind of wholehearted people living from this deep sense of worthiness. So I wrote at the top of the manila folder, and I started looking at the data. In fact, I did it first in this very four-day, very intensive data analysis where I went back, pulled these interviews, pulled the stories, pulled the incidents. What's the theme? What's the pattern? My husband left town with the kids because I always go into this kind of Jackson Pollock crazy thing where I'm just like writing and going and kind of just in my researcher mode. And so here's what I found. What they had in common was a sense of courage. And I want to separate courage and bravery for you for a minute. Courage, the original definition of courage, when it first came into the English language, it's from the Latin word cur, meaning heart. And the original definition was to tell the story of who you are with your whole heart. And so these folks had, very simply, the courage to be imperfect. They had the compassion to be kind to themselves first and then to others, because as it turns out, we can't practice compassion with other people if we can't treat ourselves kindly. And the last was they had connection, and this was the hard part, as a result of authenticity. They were willing to let go of who they thought they should be in order to be who they were, which is, you have to absolutely do that for connection. The other thing that they had in common was this. They fully embraced vulnerability. They believed that what made them vulnerable made them beautiful. They didn't talk about vulnerability being comfortable, nor did they really talk about it being excruciating, as I had heard earlier in the shame interviewing. They just talked about it being necessary. They talked about the willingness to say, I love you first. The willingness to do something where there are no guarantees. The willingness to breathe through waiting for the doctor to call after your mammogram. The willing to invest in a relationship that may or may not work out. They thought this was fundamental. I personally thought it was betrayal. I could not believe I had pledged allegiance to research, where our job, you know, the definition of research is to control and predict, to study phenomenon for the reason, for the explicit reason to control and predict. And now my very, you know, my mission to control and predict had turned up the answer that the way to live is with vulnerability and to stop controlling and predicting. This led to a little breakdown. Which actually looked more like this. And it did. It led to I call it a breakdown. My therapist calls it a spiritual awakening. Spiritual awakening sounds better than breakdown, but I assure you it was a breakdown. And I had to put my data away and go find a therapist. Let me tell you something. You know who you are when you call your friends and say, I think I need to see somebody. Do you have any recommendations? Because about five of my friends are like, woo, I wouldn't want to be your therapist. And I was like, what does that mean? And they're like, I'm just saying, you know, like, don't bring your measuring stick. Like, okay. So I found a therapist. My first meeting with her, Diana, I brought in my list of the way the wholehearted live. And I sat down, and she said, you know, how are you? And I said, I'm great, you know, I'm okay. And she said, what's going on? And I said, and this is a therapist who sees therapists, because we have to go to those, because their BS meters are good. And so I said, here's the thing, I'm struggling. And she said, what's the struggle? And I said, well, I have a vulnerability issue, and, you know, and I know that vulnerability is kind of the core of shame and fear and our struggle for worthiness, but it appears that it's also the birthplace of joy, of creativity, of belonging, of love. And I think I have a problem. And I need some help. And I said, but here's the thing, no family stuff, no childhood shit. I just need some strategies. Thank you. So she goes like this. And then I said, it's bad, right? And she said, it's neither good nor bad. It just is what it is. And I said, oh my God, this is gonna suck. And it did, and it didn't. And it took about a year. And you know how there are people that, like, when they realize that vulnerability and tenderness are important, that they kind of surrender and walk into it? A, that's not me. And B, I don't even hang out with people like that. For me, it was a year-long street fight. It was a slugfest. Vulnerability pushed, I pushed back. I lost the fight, but probably won my life back. And so then I went back into the research and spent the next couple of years really trying to understand what they, the wholehearted, what the choices they were making, and what are we doing with vulnerability? Why do we struggle with it so much? Am I alone in struggling with vulnerability? No. So this is what I learned. We numb vulnerability. when we're waiting for the call, it was funny. I sent something out on Twitter and on Facebook that says, how would you define vulnerability? What makes you feel vulnerable? And within an hour and a half, I had 150 responses. Because I wanted to know, you know, what's out there? Having to ask my husband for help because I'm sick and we're newly married. Initiating sex with my husband, initiating sex with my wife. Being turned down, asking someone out, waiting for the doctor to call back, getting laid off, laying off people. This is the world we live in. We live in a vulnerable world. And one of the ways we deal with it is we numb vulnerability. And I think there's evidence, and it's not the only reason this evidence exists, but I think that there, it's a huge cause. We are the most in debt, obese, addicted, and medicated adult cohort in U.S. history. The problem is, and I learned this from the research, that you cannot selectively numb emotion. You can't say, here's the bad stuff. Here's vulnerability, here's grief, here's shame, here's fear, here's disappointment. I don't want to feel these. I'm going to have a couple of beers and a banana nut muffin. I don't want to feel these. And I know that's knowing laughter. I hack into your lives for a living. I know that's, God. You can't numb those hard feelings without numbing the other affects or emotions. You cannot selectively numb. So when we numb those, we numb joy. We numb gratitude. We numb happiness. And then we are miserable and we are looking for purpose and meaning. And then we feel vulnerable. So then we have a couple of beers and a banana nut muffin. And it becomes this dangerous cycle. One of the things that I think that we need to think about is why and how we numb. And it doesn't just have to be addiction. The other thing we do is we make everything that's uncertain, certain. Religion has gone from a belief in faith and mystery to certainty. I'm right, you're wrong, shut up. That's it. Just certain. The more afraid we are, the more vulnerable we are, the more afraid we are. This is what politics looks like today. There's no discourse anymore. There's no conversation. There's just blame. You know what blame? You know how blame is described in the research? A way to discharge pain and discomfort. We perfect, if there's anyone who wants their life to look like this, it would be me. But it doesn't work, because what we do is we take fat from our butts and put it in our cheeks. Which just, I hope in 100 years people will look back and go, wow. You know? And we perfect, most dangerously, our children. Let me tell you what we think about children. They're hardwired for struggle when they get here. When you hold those perfect little babies in your hand, our job is not to say, look at her, she's perfect. My job is just to keep her perfect, make sure she makes the tennis team by fifth grade and Yale by seventh grade. That's not our job. Our job is to look and say, you know what? You're imperfect and you're wired for struggle, but you are worthy of love and belonging. That's our job. Show me a generation of kids raised like that and we'll end the problems I think that we see today. We pretend that what we do doesn't have an effect on people. We do that in our personal lives. We do that corporate, whether it's a bailout, an oil spill, a recall. We pretend like what we're doing doesn't have a huge impact on other people. I would say to companies, this is not our first rodeo, people. We just need you to be authentic and real and say, we're sorry, we'll fix it. But there's another way, and I'll leave you with this. This is what I have found. To let ourselves be seen. Deeply seen. Vulnerably seen. To love with our whole hearts, even though there's no guarantee. And that's really hard. And I can tell you as a parent, that's excruciatingly difficult. To practice gratitude and joy in those moments of kind of terror when we're wondering, can I love you this much? Can I believe in this passionately? Can I be this fierce about this? Just to be able to stop and instead of catastrophizing what might happen, to say, I'm just so grateful. because to feel this vulnerable means I'm alive. And the last, which I think is probably the most important, is to believe that we're enough. Because when we work from a place, I believe, that says, I'm enough, then we stop screaming and start listening. We're kinder and gentler to the people around us, and we're kinder and gentler to ourselves. That's all I have.
Thank you. Hey. Hope you enjoyed the video. I took like 2 pages of notes, and I didn't get that. I missed some stuff I really wanted to get. But hey, Jay, welcome. Glad you could join us. Okay, so does anybody want to begin the share? Don, you look like you're over it. No, you got nothing, huh? Wow, okay. Well, did you like the talk?
I have a thought from the 4 minutes of it that I did see. Can I go ahead?
Yeah, I was reading something on the board. Yes, sir. Yes, please.
I heard her speaking of kids being hardwired for struggle, and Bev's main message about the darkness having a lesson for us, I think, ties into that, because it's saying there's value in struggle. And where do we struggle but where we face our darkness or things we don't know, right? Or a situation we're put in with an expectation that we are not prepared for. This is what struggle is by definition, right? So it's motivating to us, right? And so while we find it something to avoid or to fight against, maybe that's not actually the best approach. That, you know, the best approach is to meet it head on and to enter into the struggle and walk through the pain and do the best we can with God in our hearts, not the God that's a separate God, but the God that's a God that's here and now in all of us. And so that's what I heard in the few minutes that I listened to it. So giving up the mic.
Yeah. Thanks, Jay. Yeah. It's a good talk. If you haven't heard it before, you should go back and listen to it. It's Brené Brown on vulnerability is the name of the talk. She had a lot of cool stuff to say. Yeah, Shauna.
Sorry, did you want to finish your thought and then I can come back?
No, don't go anywhere. You don't even need to mute. Just let me say that, when Ann Blanchard first started teaching in Awakening Together, she was reading Brené Brown's book. And you often hear Ann talk about leaning into the vulnerability. And she bases that on Brené Brown's work. And I think there's a lot to be said for leaning into vulnerability. And certainly I have some experiences to share about that, but not before you go, Sean. I want you to go.
Okay, thank you. Yes, and she did say lean into the discomfort.
Yes.
In the beginning. And no surprise that a sense of unworthiness is what causes a lot of us not to want to connect, of course, right? And I love the way that she put together the sense of unworthiness or sense of worthiness, that I am worthy, with a strong sense of belonging, and that the connectedness goes back and forth.
Yeah, and Shauna, I'm going to interrupt you in the middle, just in the nature of conversation and say that that really caught me too, because she said, notes, show me where this is. She said that shame, and you may have been getting ready to go here, shame was the fear of disconnection, that we all have this strong urge to be connected, and that a shame is that fear that there's something about me that if people knew it, I wouldn't be worthy of connection. Yeah, that's that same nexus there. Go ahead.
Exactly, yeah, and that's what I was going to use that as the contrast, was of course the shame of being who we really were, being who we really are. People see that, oh my God, they're going to see who I really am, and that's what makes people not want to be around people. And I experienced that myself, especially before I got on the spiritual path, is, oh my gosh, so nervous to be around people. I didn't even want to be around people because they'd see what I really was, right? And starting to heal that is so much better. I'm looking forward to connection with people because of that. The other thing that people with a sense of worthiness have is the belief that they're worthy of connection, that they're the belief that they are worthy of being around others. And it's courage. They have the courage to be vulnerable, compassion with themselves first, and then compassion with others, because you can't have compassion unless you have it for yourself first. And then a connection to, and that is to let go of who they thought they should be and be authentic. And that's a real challenge for me also, for the same reason. Learning to be authentic, no matter what I think other people think. And of course, I can't know what other people think. It's that I am unworthiness coming up again saying, well, they must think this.
Hey, that's funny. Who said to you, it was Tom said to you the other day, I think. No, because you and Tom weren't in the same place. Somebody said something, and they're like, no, I don't really like that. And Tom's like, wow, that's refreshing, because people don't say that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's being authentic, right?
Yeah.
And then let's see, just a couple other things. And then, of course, when we stuff vulnerability, then we numb it. And I saw that so much in especially the homeless population. And it was just not only do they numb the fear, they numb the joy. They don't have either one. And she touched on that, too. And if we just numb our joy, our gratitude, and our happiness. So that's the main stuff I got out of it. Great talk. Thank you.
Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you, Shauna. By the way, she also has one I saw earlier today. She's got one specifically on shame. I don't know how long it is or anything, but if you want to look her up by name for shame too, I think that would be an interesting follow-up. Shauna takes great notes. Next time I have to take a test, I am taking Shauna in. I'm going to have her go in and take it for me, take notes for me at any rate. Shauna, let me ask you, she had like 5 prescriptions at the end of the talk. Were you able to get those down in your notes?
I got 3 of them. I'm distracted because my Giants baseballs, they're playing the last game of the whole.
You're not bad if you didn't get them all. I just thought you're such a good note taker. Maybe you did. Well, I got love with our whole hearts, believe we're enough,
gratitude.
Right.
Gratitude. Those are 3 I got.
Yeah, I missed the first couple too. And I don't even really have an excuse, except for the technical stuff. I also thought
one of them was.
Thank you, Connie.
Be authentic and real.
Oh, good.
And let ourselves be seen.
Oh, good. Thank you, Connie. You picked up the other 2. Wonderful. Let ourselves be seen. Isn't that something? You know, it's so funny because don't we do that? We all really, I think she nailed it when she said we all really have that yearning for connection. And yet we don't want anybody to see us, right? So we kind of keep everybody and everything on a leash. It's more like a pole. We keep everything at arm's length. It's that whole, it seems to me, it goes back to that whole idea of, you know, needing to stay in control that we've been talking about in General Healing Year One, right? I'll tell you when to move, you know, I'll move these chess pieces on the board. And we maintain that, or we try and maintain that control because of this sense of unworthiness, you know? Yeah. Anyway, that's the way it strikes me. Yeah.
I had a thought, unless Don going first. Hearing what Shauna said about letting go of the I am bad thought and that being tied to authentic and saying what we want to say, letting ourselves be seen, I think those are really all tied together. I think there was a time in my life where I started saying what I really think. And I think it was when I really started letting go of some elements of the I am bad thought where I could let myself be seen. There's different levels. Like in my case, you know, a woman says, hey, do you like this dress? And, you know, I don't like it. I have to be careful of how I say that. Otherwise it'll offend her. You know, like, it's like this one thing of, saying our thoughts, you know, and being kind as well. You know, in that, being seen, like getting tied to that, like when I accept myself and I don't care about your judgments of me, and you've been a great example of that for me, Jacqueline, is you speak your mind, completely. And, you know, it's, you know, am I more concerned? There's a choice here, right? Do I want to go for the vanity thing and try to please you in some manipulative way by saying something I think you'd like to hear? Or do I want to say what I think because I'm being true to myself and I'm letting myself be seen with kindness, of course, not out of a disrespect for another person, but like, you know, if someone offers cooked me food and they ask me how I like it, you know, and I have to say, well, I don't really care for it. Yeah. Thank you for the preparation, but I don't like it. You know, I have to say that if I'm going to let myself be seen. And, you know, when I do that with kindness, it's always received, you know, in a better way than if I'm like, this sucks. You know, I'm all for the be yourself, let yourself be seen, be authentic. But I think it's important to have a spirit of kindness when you do that. Because I've had, coming from a background of having a very sarcastic father, and I associated being seen and saying what I really think is not necessarily being a very nice thing to do, you know. So there's that too, mixed in with all of this discussion. So giving up the mic.
I'm curious. Okay, so we're talking about a very interesting subject, being that I was so vulnerable earlier today.
Yeah.
So I just visited with my family and then got that this whole other thing, separate situation seemingly with my son just this morning. And so there's so many layers to this vulnerability thing. Like, for instance, you know, when I visited with my family, we sat down to, you know, we were at a restaurant. And we were talking. At the time, I didn't know about any diagnosis. I just knew they took him in. And my nephew started to cry and tear up. Well, I looked across and all I saw was just this beautiful being sharing, and he was, I don't know, it's just like, have you ever seen someone look kind of dull and then all of a sudden they're like in high def? It's like something about him just cleared up. It's like the aura, his aura was shining for a moment. But my brother, who's almost like military-like, even though he's never been in the military, he's like, are you crying? You look like you're going to cry. Because it was actually right when he was just about to cry. And then I spoke up for him. I'm like, look, I think what's going on with him is just his heart is breaking over what's going on with Alex, and he cares
it's empathy.
For him so deeply.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now that I think helped a little to soften so that he could see maybe perhaps, and I don't know if this is true, that he could see maybe some, you know, understand what was going on. But later the next day when I went over to help my mom, they were doing a big project on her home, and I was helping out doing some grinding and sanding so we could paint. And it came to light that behind my back, they were calling me a wimp ass. Because that same day at the conversation, you know, I started crying too about it. Because it was breaking my heart. But it also was touching me deeply at the same time that my nephew was expressing his feelings as well. And I never saw that side of my nephew before. And I was like, oh my God, he loves Alex, and he's got such a big heart. I never saw that before. Well, so here I am with my brother, who's very obviously against crying and showing emotion and really doesn't want an influence like this one, pointing at myself. Yeah. Oh, like, you know, like I'm modeling for them, you know, display of emotion is acceptable. And I even said that. I said, you know, Chris, that's his name, my brother, I don't know if your kids are like me at all, but sometimes when I'm feeling compassion and love for someone, like my heart's breaking wide open, like it is now, love leaks out my eyes. It just happens. And I don't know if they're like me. And so, you know, the conversation did take and then my brother actually got really sweet for a second. And he was like, well, if you feel so strongly about it, you should just be praying for him. You know, and it's tough. Just pray for him, you know?
Yeah. Well, and the fact is that these things that ego does.
Sorry.
I'm sorry. What are you doing? No, stay unmuted. Stay here in this conversation. the fact is, Dawn, that in this society, we're all in on this. You know, they say that like there's one ego, and society is in on this vast conspiracy to numb our vulnerability. Right? It's not your brother is not necessarily an outlier. All of society says, don't show your emotions. Don't be vulnerable. Get control of yourself. Take control of the situation. Take the bull by the horns. I mean, that's
him.
You know, that's, yeah. Well, that's what this whole society does, right? It's all, frankly, a mask. I sound like a crazy person, but it is. It's the way we're raised. It's a mask. It's a mass conspiracy to keep everything in check so that things just be just so.
Happened last night, once I realized, you know, the truth came out that they had called me a wimp ass for probably the crying, I was like, I had to do the work on it. So, yeah. I mean, I have felt a lot of shame. Like, is it inappropriate to be crying in front of them, even though my heart's breaking? And is it wrong? And then I tell you right now, because when she was talking, she brought up the kids. She did, and the belonging and the connection. And here I go thinking, oh, you're the reason this is all happening to Alex. You know, when you left, he lost that sense of belonging and connection. It, you know, and it is so easy. And what I'm battling with right now is kind of like what Cheryl alluded to earlier when she said how when she, her daughter got that diagnosis to like, you know, beating myself up that I've done this somehow. And yeah. So when she started talking about that part, I'm like, oh, great. There's the self-abuse coming in. I'm like, oh, this is your fault, Dawn. You did this. You broke his sense of connection, his sense of belonging. And I'm like, and then the next questioning was like, was that why he's displaying this behavior? You know, so
was it you who was talking about, maybe it was somebody else, was talking about that book, that angel book where everybody got together and
the
the soul and the sun. Yeah.
I was doing my homework with Katie.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, again, and I think I mentioned at the time, you know, that's what Ephesians talks about. Love is spirit, giving to spirit, through spirit, that which spirit requests. I mean, it's all a, hey, we're having this big experience, you know, so nobody's in this against their will. And that's important, I think, to remember in your situation, in Cheryl's situation. I think it's important for all of us to remember all the time, right? It's a dance. We're just, yeah. We're all doing the dance, and we take it as it comes, right? And there's no blame, right? There's no blame to go around. So I appreciate, and I thought you might appreciate this talk about vulnerability, given what you're going through.
It's really like, I felt very on display earlier, but I just, you know, it hit me so hard in a good way, though, because it was like a gift.
Yeah, it is a
homily,
gift.
Reverend Beverly's homily was just like, oh, my. Oh, George, go for it.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
I'm here in a KOA campground in Waukini, Kansas.
Oh, I've been at that campground many times.
340 miles from La Vida. My internet connection keeps fading, saying I have an unstable connection. So
we hear you fine.
All right. And we got the air conditioner going, and my wife's yabbering in the background there. So, yes. Yeah, we've already decided there's only one of us going to return from this trip. I think we're only 3 days into it. So, anyway, first of all, I've got a sister-in-law that's a schizophrenic. Okay, so if that's the diagnosis, if that's what it is, it's not the end of the world. Liz, she actually exhibited these symptoms when she was 18, which is, I understand, typical that schizophrenia shows up in the late teenage years or whatever. Not that I'm an expert, just my personal interaction there. I thought it was interesting. I heard early on in the talk, and I lost part of it because my computer battery died on me and I had to plug it in. But she said, one of her coworkers said, if you can't measure it, it doesn't exist. Well, nothing that she's talking about is measurable. So I thought that was interesting. And connection is why we're here. So, you know, and I think that the egoic sense that we all subscribe to actually feels that. It doesn't exhibit that, but it really feels like the not enough is we're not connected enough.
Right.
And we all have this shame and guilt that we're not good enough. So, I enjoyed that part and talked about vulnerability. You know, we all wear a mask. We all have a sense of unworthiness for whatever reason. And, but there again, egoic sense is the sense of judgment. So, you know, if somebody calls you a name or whatever, you know, it's just, that's just the characteristics, one of the characteristics of the ego. So people who are wholehearted have a sense of worthiness and a sense of courage to be imperfect. Well, I got a sign up there. I don't know if I'm courageous, but I'm certainly imperfect. And, for those of you at La Vida, when you talk to my wife, she'll be glad to share that with you. But she talked about spiritual awakening, and I really didn't catch what she said on that. Let's see. Numbness, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, numbness that we really don't want to feel because we're afraid that what we feel is an intense sense of it's my fault. I'm not good enough, and I should be ashamed of myself because, you know, what for whatever reason, you know, just pick a reason. So, anyway, yeah, I enjoyed that talk. You know, the few times I've talked to a counselor, which was generally a marriage counselor, which I felt did me no good. You know, I know that's people have different opinions about counselors and their worth. But, you know, evidently some people get a tremendous benefit from that. And I understand that. It's just hasn't been one of my issues. Actually, my wife is a counselor. She says she feels like Lucy, you know. She's got her friends that she talks to, counsels with on a regular basis. So, okay. Well, I'll stop here and let someone else.
Yeah, thank you, George. That was, I appreciate the points that you picked out to talk about. I really do. And I appreciate you bringing back up the idea of courage. And I think it's important in what we've been talking about with Dawn today and what's going on with her. And her story about her nephew, feeling empathy and tearing up. Again, she defined courage. She said the original definition of that word was to tell who you are with your whole heart. And that's what your nephew was doing today. And that's what you were doing. Regardless of the name your family had for that, that is courageousness, right? And it's only ego, as George pointed out, it's only ego that says, don't do that. They'll know that you're, you know, soft-hearted and can't keep it together, or whatever it is, right? Ego has all kinds of reasons, all of them based in the I'm not worthy, for us not to be courageous and tell who we are with our whole heart. And Dawn, you do that better than anybody I know. you do. You absolutely do. And frankly, this courageousness is exactly what's called for on the spiritual path. That's what, I mean, listen to the masters, listen to the old day masters, listen to the current day masters. That's what they're going to tell you. Be who you are with your whole heart. Find out who that is. Don't be afraid to be who you are with your whole heart. That is spirituality. That's what Michael Singer's been telling us, right? In General Healing Year One. Be who you are. Tell who you are with your whole heart all of the time. I want to, yay, Dawn got goosebumps. and I want to say that, I went through like a year or so of, exactly that practice, frankly, in terms of stepping through the fear. Right? It's the same exercise. Just go on and be it. Do it. Whatever your heart's leading you to do, be that. Do that. And don't let the fear stop you from doing that. Live like you're limitless, which is, again, this whole thing, this wholeheartedness. And that requires vulnerability. That requires sitting around a table crying when nobody else is crying, when everybody else is plotting and planning and figuring out how to fix it. Which is where Brene Brown said she started, right? She just wanted to fix it. She didn't want to lean into the discomfort. She wanted to wrestle it to the ground and fix it. So, I think that she gave us great advice. I think that the points that you guys picked up on were, really intuitive and insightful. And I'm going to see if anybody else has anything else that they would like to share regarding Brene's talk or anything else on their heart. Connie Poole.
Yeah, of course, Jacqueline, you know I'm watch a lot of the political shows. And it occurred to me some time ago, her point that not belonging was a lot of our problems in society. That a lot of problems stem from the feelings of not belonging. You know, I think we have people, a lot of people that would appear to feel disenfranchised, from this group from that group. It people go to extremes to join an organization where they feel like they belong. I mean, they have kids going to ISIS camps. Kids that are joining Nazi groups. For just that sense, because they have felt disenfranchised, and in an attempt to belong to an organization that will see merit in their seemingly misguided perceptions.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's an excellent point. She said that one of the ways we deal with vulnerability is to make everything that's uncertain certain, and then that's why we get that between groups. But we want to be certain about the group that we're in, right? You join the group to belong, and then you want to be certain that that tells you something about yourself and your place in the world. And therein lies the conflict. So. I think you're absolutely right about that. Jay?
Thank you, Connie. I just had a huge insight as you were sharing that. The thought I had was that our need in our ego mind for belonging is, let me see if I can say this correctly, the ego's misguided way of trying to correct the fundamental false belief that it is separate. That is its way of trying to resolve that problem in a way that keeps you separate.
Yeah.
Don't tell anybody, don't bust me on that one, because then you'd really be letting go of me, and that's not good, because we don't want you one with God and all that. So, I just, wow, boom. Thank you. I mean, that just became so clear. I mean, isn't that fundamental? All the psychologists, our need for belonging is so core to our identity, blah, blah, blah. I mean, that's what all your schooling tells you. The need for belonging, family, blah, that's at the core, right? But I just thought, oh my gosh, it's another scam. It's a fundamental one, a one that like everybody's bought into, including me. But like, as I maybe wake up and let go of the mind, maybe that I have noticed the need to belong decrease in me. Need to feel like I'm, because I belong to everyone, but I think that takes a particular effort of the kind we do here in Awakening Together to get past that very, very deep belief that we have to belong to other egos. Otherwise we're in big trouble, rather than belonging to self and being with all people and they're inside of me. I'm projecting blah, blah, blah. It's the whole thing. So there is no solution outwardly. There'll always be disenfranchisement. That's what I've realized. We can't fix it. No governmental system can fix it. No social initiatives can fix it. We can try. But I think that the solution is the healing of our individual minds. That's it. Giving up the mic.
Awesome. Thank you, Jay. Thank you, everybody. This has been great. I love this group. I love your participation. And we'll see you next week. Same time. Bye.